Welcome to Modern Practice. I'm Dr. Tom Villanueva, practicing physician and associate vice president of clinical resources at Vizient. On this episode of Modern Practice, we'll feature part two of our discussion about the need for stress first aid and for healthcare staff and the COVID HCW project that's addressing this problem. Joining me is Dr. Courtney Gudengel. So can you go over the model of stress first aid?
Sure. I'm going to go over it at a pretty high level because the training to actually learn how to do stress first aid takes at least 1 to 3 hours, depending on how you're being trained in it. But at a really high level, flexibility and sort of tiny steps are emphasized. So it's not meant to be a giant overhaul. It's supposed to be easily incorporated into day-to-day functioning and workflow. The timing and context of when healthcare workers take the actions to support each other is emphasized as being really important. Mentoring and problem solving with each other is highlighted. And again, it's emphasized that it's not meant to address all issues. So clearly, some people will have needs for higher levels of mental or behavioral health care, and that's encouraged and supported as part of this model so that you help bridge people to higher care as needed when that's indicated. But the way we can think of it is sort of a spectrum of colors where green is ready and calm, all the way to red, which is sort of the injured state. So in the ready state, which is green, it's ideal. So you can care for yourself effectively and you can care for others effectively. From there, the next portion is yellow, which is where you're reacting, which is still not a terrible state. You're not being pushed too far or too hard. But then the next stage, which we color code as orange, is injured, where you're starting to be harmed by stress. And this is when you should really be employing stress first aid, if not maybe even a little earlier. And really, you should be employing it at all stages of the spectrum, but this is where it becomes really critical because you're trying to avoid people from moving into the ill state, where there's really a loss of quality of life, where they're in distress, where there's injury, and higher care is needed from that state. So we have this visual color coding that we have on badges and pins that go on lanyards and things like that. And then we summarize the actions of stress first aid just as an easy way to remember as the 7 C's, which again, there's plenty of detail about each of these steps, but there's checking, which means that you are ready to observe and listen. You know your team members well. You've made an effort to get to know them and to open up opportunities to have conversations with each other organically throughout the day or night. Coordinate, which is to get help or refer people as needed. Cover, which can be sort of conceptually thought of as getting someone to safety as soon as possible. And that could mean physical safety, but it's really meant to be getting them to a place where they can be more mentally or psychologically comfortable if they're in a very stressful situation or just been in a very stressful situation. For example, maybe a code that went poorly. Calm, I think calming is self-explanatory. Connecting by getting support from each other and others. Competence, so restoring someone's sense of effectiveness. And finally, confidence. So really helping people restore their sense of self-esteem and hope that can really take a hit just during sort of normal patient care, but particularly during what feels sometimes like a never-ending pandemic. So I could talk about each of these steps for a long time, but that's just a very basic overview of the model. Again, the whole idea is that it's not extra work for the healthcare workers, but it becomes part of daily life and just communication and a shared language with each other.
So Courtney, tell us what's the benefits of participating in the Cover HCW project?
Well, first, it's incredibly helpful just to contribute to our understanding of this really important problem. We want to make sure that we're offering a resource that is evidence-based, that's going to be useful and tailored to healthcare workers. So any hospital that participates is really helping to push the field forward in that way. Also, a direct benefit is that those who participate get early access to a package of materials, including during the study period, training by the person who developed stress first aid in the first place. Of those that participate, those who are intervention sites get access a little bit sooner. But the idea is that all sites, including those who are control sites, will have access before the study ends. Our overall goal is to get all of these materials out publicly as soon as we possibly can, as soon as the study periods are over. And then one other benefit that might be nice for healthcare workers is that those who participate receive CME, depending on what they do for the project, and also depending on their professional role. But we have CME from many different organizations. But site champions get a little bit more because they're doing the site champion training. Those are the ones who are training their peers. And then healthcare workers who participate get also CME for the trainings that they do.
That's fantastic. So when a healthcare organization participates in this project, what are the first steps in getting the process going?
So the organization has to be part of Vizient and contribute to the clinical database. And once we've established that, we learn more about the organization or healthcare system, including which hospitals or clinics might be interested. We found that it's helpful to recruit and have participate systems that can contribute multiple hospitals and clinics because there's sort of less coordination between different systems, which can be tricky. We also try to figure out whether the organization can defer to our IRB or whether the organization needs its own IRB's approval because that helps to inform the timing and feasibility. And then, of course, we meet to explain more details about the study, answer any questions that the organization might have, and generally figure out if the timing will work. Once an organization decides to participate, we make sure that there is a match site for them. Again, that's easier in larger health systems or any health systems that have two hospitals that are a reasonable match for each other. We do the randomization, and then that intervention site, the one that is doing stress first aid, identifies their what we call the site leader, their site champion who gets the training and then trains others, and then where in the hospital they're going to actually deploy the intervention. So we encourage that it be deployed in teams or units to take advantage of existing relationships.
So in many parts of the country, we're seeing that we're doing remarkably better and we're seeing a wind down in the pandemic. But for many of our healthcare professionals, things have not particularly wind down. We're still just as busy. So what about the individual participants? What are the requirements for them?
So for the individual participants who are healthcare workers, it just depends on whether they're in the intervention or control site. So at the intervention site where they're doing stress first aid, the healthcare workers are trained by their site champion, or there could be multiple site champions. So that's about an hour of training. And then we ask that they actually practice the stress first aid in brief booster sessions at an average of about 30 minutes per week. Now that can be spread out to take advantage of whatever workflows there are. So if teams are having regular huddles 3 times a week, it could be out as 10 minutes 3 times a week. It could be a 1 hour session every couple of weeks to get together and talk about how it's going. But we do ask for that total time of boosting it so that people remember to use stress first aid, support each other in using stress first aid because there is a learning curve. Think about maybe were there any missed opportunities where they could have used it but didn't. So just to keep it at the top of everyone's mind because we do want to make sure it's implemented as faithfully as we can. So at the control sites, there's obviously less to do. The healthcare workers are not getting trained, but they are asked to do the before and after quick surveys so that we can compare how outcomes might have changed between the two sites.
Okay, so but what about the site champion you've mentioned? What's the requirements there?
Yeah, so the site champion is this really important role. They're the ones that receive the longer training about how to do stress first aid, and they're trained in how to train their peers, basically. So it's what we call a train the trainer model. And we pick this because we hope that it'll be a feasible way of spreading this intervention. Ideally, that site champion is sort of what we call a trusted insider. So someone that is well respected by their colleagues, ideally works within the team or unit or closely with them of whichever unit is going to be asked to deploy this stress first aid. Again, and ideally, they'd have experience in teaching or just informal experience with engaging with their peers effectively. Someone with strong leadership skills and team player, obviously, those are all really helpful qualities. And of course, someone who has the time and enthusiasm to take on the role. So it doesn't work very well when someone is sort of forced to do this. We want someone right. who's enthusiastic, wants to do this, sees this as really important. And there's another important role, which I mentioned briefly, which is the site leader role. And that is someone at a pretty high level, often C-suite level. And they are also championing it in a way, but at a very high level. So this ensures that leadership is aware and has really bought into this and supports it from the highest level of the institution. They are usually the ones to identify the site champions and to determine with the champions which units or teams will be trained. And they're expected to provide the support that site champions will need and to sort of boost the healthcare worker survey to send out emails encouraging folks to do those surveys.
So Courtney, what would you say to listeners who would like to establish their own first aid program for their staff members?
So I would encourage it. There's clearly this huge need to support our frontline healthcare workers. And particularly if you're a Vizient member, I would encourage you to reach out to see if we can support you with that as part of the study, which will have the benefit of connecting you with materials, but also help to push the field forward as we were talking about, particularly if you are a system that has multiple hospitals and maybe a pair of hospitals that's ready to go. We have the final wave of the study that is starting in September. This is the third wave and the last wave. The first one was in spring and the second starts really soon in June. And then as soon as that third wave is done, we're hoping to start sharing these resources with hospitals across the country. So these will be freely and publicly available. And of course, with Vizient membership as well.
Courtney, thank you so much for joining us for these past two episodes.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
That's the end of this episode. Please join us for other Modern Practice podcasts on the Vizient Medical Leadership Channel. Subscribe today, like us, or send us your comments. And also please listen and subscribe to SG2 Perspectives, the podcast and the latest of healthcare strategy. I'm Dr. Tom Villanueva. Thanks for listening.